Chapter 16. The blade glanced off his body armor and sliced his left upper arm. As Coriolanus leaped backward, he swung at Bobbin, but only encountered air. He landed in a pile of debris, old boards, and plaster as his hand searched for some kind of defense. Bobbin sprang at him again, aiming the knife at his face. Coriolanus's fingers closed around a 2x4, and he brought it up, catching Bobbin in the temple hard, sending him to his knees. And then he was on his feet, using the board like a club, bringing it down again and again without being sure where it made contact. "We have to go!" Sejanus shouted. Coriolanus could hear catcalls now and feet pounding down the bleachers. Confused, he made a move toward Marcus's body, but Sejanus yanked him away. "No, leave him! Run!" Needing no persuasion, Coriolanus sprinted for the barricade. Pain shot from his elbow to his shoulder, but he ignored it,
pumping his arms as hard as he could,
the way Professor Sickle had taught them. When he reached the barricade, barbed wire bit into his shirt, and as he turned to pull it free, he saw them. The two tributes from District 4, Coral and Mizzen, and Tanner, the slaughterhouse kid, making straight for him, armed to the teeth. Mizzen drew his arm back to throw a trident. The fabric on Coriolanus's sleeve ripped wide as he yanked it from the barbed wire and dove out of the line of fire, with Sejanus right behind him. Only a few weak rays of moonlight penetrated the layers of the barricade, and Coriolanus found himself crashing into wood and fencing like a wild bird in a cage, surely alerting any tribute who'd somehow missed his presence. He ran face first into a concrete slab, and Sejanus plowed into him from behind, smacking his forehead into the unrelenting surface a second time. When he pushed back, it was as if the concussion had never left. His head throbbed, and a cloud of confusion descended. The tributes started up a whooping sound, rattling their weapons against the barricade as they tracked the mentors through the labyrinth. Which direction to go? The tribute seemed to be all around them. Sejanus grabbed his arm and began to pull him, and he stumbled blindly along behind, wounded and terrified. Was this it, then? Was this how he died? The fury at the injustice of it all, the mockery it made of his existence, sent a surge of energy through him, and he crashed past Sejanus, finding himself on his hands and knees in a cloud of soft red light. The passageway. Up ahead, he could make out the turnstiles, where the peacekeepers were clustered at the temporary bars. He ran for his life. The passageway wasn't long, but it seemed interminable. His legs rose and fell as if he were waist-high in glue, and black specks dotted his vision. Sejanus stayed steady at his elbow, but he could hear the tributes gaining. Something heavy and unyielding, a brick, clipped the side of his neck. Another object punctured his vest and stuck, bobbing behind him until it fell with a clank. Where was the cover? The protective gunfire from the peacekeepers? There was nothing. Nothing at all. And the bars still stood flush with the floor. He wanted to scream for them to kill the tributes, shoot them dead in their tracks, but his breath was in too short supply. Someone heavy-footed shrank his lead to a few yards. But once again, remembering Professor Sickle's training, he didn't dare waste a second looking back to see who it was. Before him, the peacekeepers finally managed to tilt the unit of bars inward, achieving a gap of about 12 inches at the ground. Coriolanus dove, sanding several layers of skin off his chin on the rough floor and just getting his hands beneath the bars where the peacekeepers latched onto him and gave a great yank. Lacking time to turn his head, the rest of his face scraped against the filthy surface until he reached safety. The guards dumped him immediately to retrieve Sejanus, who gave a sharp cry as Tanner's knife cut open the back of his calf before he slid out of range. The bars were slammed into place, and bolts locked down the unit, but the tributes were undeterred. Tanner, Mizzen, and Coral jabbed their weapons through the bars at Coriolanus and Sejanus, spewing hate-filled taunts while the peacekeepers banged on the turnstiles with their batons. Not a shot was fired, not even a shot of pepper spray. Coriolanus realized that they must have been under orders to leave the tributes untouched. As the peacekeepers helped him to his feet, he spat out in rage, "Thanks for having our backs!"
"Just following orders. Don't blame us if Gaul thinks you're expendable, boy," said the old peacekeeper who'd promised him cover.
Someone tried to steady him, but he shoved them off. "I can walk. I can walk. No thanks to you." Then he listed sideways, almost hitting the floor, before they hoisted him up again and made their way back through the lobby. Coriolanus babbled a long string of profanities, which made no impression, and hung in their grip like dead weight until they dropped him, unceremoniously, just outside the arena. After a minute, they deposited Sejanus beside him. They both lay panting on the tiles that graced the front of the arena.
"I'm so sorry, Corio," said Sejanus. "I'm so sorry."
Corio was a nickname for old friends, for family, for people Coriolanus loved, and this was the moment Sejanus decided to try it out? If he'd had the energy, Coriolanus would have reached over and strangled him. No one paid them any attention. Ma had vanished. Dr. Gall and Dean Highbottom debated audio levels as they watched the feeds in the van. The peacekeepers stood in loose clumps, waiting for instructions. 5 minutes passed before an ambulance drove up and popped open its back doors. The boys were loaded in without so much as a glance from the authorities. The medic gave Coriolanus a pad to hold against his arm wound while she dealt with the more pressing issue of Sejanus's calf, which was producing quite a bit of blood. Coriolanus dreaded returning to the hospital and that untrustworthy Dr. Wayne until he saw through the small pane of glass that they'd arrived at the Citadel, which seemed twice as scary. Unloaded onto gurneys, they were swiftly transported deep down to the lab where Clemencia had been attacked, leaving Coriolanus to wonder just what modifications they had in store for him. Accidents must have been frequent in the lab, as a small medical clinic awaited them. It had lacked the sophistication for Clemencia's resurrection, yet seemed adequate to patch up the boys. A white curtain divided their two hospital beds, but Coriolanus could hear Sejanus giving one-word answers to the doctor's inquiries. He gave little more himself as they stitched his arm and cleaned his raw face. His head ached, but he didn't dare tell them about the rebound of his concussion for fear he'd end up being admitted to the hospital for an indefinite stay. All he wanted was to get away from these people. Despite his protests, they stuck an IV in his arm to rehydrate him and deliver some cocktail of drugs, and he lay rigid on the bed, willing himself not to flee. Although he'd done Dr. Gall's bidding, although he'd succeeded, he felt more vulnerable than ever. And here he lay, wounded and trapped, hidden away in her lair. The pain eased in his arm, but he did not feel the velvet curtain of morphling draw around him. Some alternative drug must have been administered because, if anything, his mind felt a heightened sharpness, and he noticed everything, from the weave of the bedsheet to the tug of the tape on his raw skin to the bitter taste the metal cup of water left on his tongue. Peacekeeper boots approached and withdrew, taking a limping Sejanus with them. Deep in the lab, a round of squeals heralded some creature's feeding time, and the faint scent of fish reached him. After that, a relative hush fell over the place for a long time. He considered trying to slip away, but knew in his heart he was expected to wait. To wait for the soft slipper tread that inevitably made its way to his cubicle. When Dr. Gall pulled back the curtain, the twilight of the nocturnal lab gave Coriolanus the strange impression that she stood on the edge of a cliff, that if he were to give her even the smallest shove, she would topple backward into some great chasm, never to be heard from again. If only, he thought, if only. Instead, she moved forward and placed two fingers on his wrist, checking his pulse. He flinched at the feel of her cool, papery fingers.
"I started out as a medical doctor, you know," she said. "Obstetrics."
How awful, Coriolanus thought, to have you be the first person in the world a baby sees.
"Wasn't really for me," said Dr. Gall. Parents always want reassurances you can't give about the futures their children face. How could I possibly know what they'd encounter? Like you, tonight. Who would have imagined Crassus Snow's darling baby boy fighting for his life in the Capitol arena? Not him, for one.
Coriolanus didn't know how to respond. He could barely remember his father, let alone divine his imaginings.
What was it like in the arena?
Asked Dr. Gall. Terrifying, said Coriolanus flatly.
It's designed to be.
She checked his pupils, shining a light into each of his eyes.
What about the tributes?
The light hurt his head. What about them? Dr. Gall moved on to his stitches.
What did you think of them now that their chains have been removed? Now that they've tried to kill you, because it was of no benefit to them, your death. You're not the competition.
It was true. They'd been close enough to recognize him, but they'd hunted down him and Sejanus. Sejanus, who'd treated the tributes so well, fed them, defended them, given them last rites, even though they could have used that opportunity to kill one another. I think I underestimated how much they hate us, said Coriolanus.
And when you realized that, what was your response?
She asked. He thought back to Bobbin, to the escape, to the tribute's bloodlust even after he'd cleared the bars. I wanted them dead. I wanted every one of them dead. Dr. Gall nodded.
Well, mission accomplished with that little one from 8. You beat him to a pulp. Have to make up some story for that buffoon Flickerman to tell in the morning. But what a wonderful opportunity for you. Transformative.
Was it? Coriolanus remembered the sickening thuds of his board against Bobbin. So he had what? Murdered the boy? No, not that. It was an open and shut case of self-defense. But what then? He had killed him, certainly. There would never be any erasing that. No regaining that innocence. He had taken human life.
Wasn't it? More than I could have hoped. I needed you to get Sejanus out of the arena, of course, but I wanted you to taste that as well,
she said. Even if it killed me? Asked Coriolanus.
Without the threat of death, it wouldn't have been much of a lesson, said Dr. Gall. What happened in the arena? That's humanity undressed. The tributes, and you too, how quickly civilization disappears. All your fine manners, education, family background, everything you pride yourself on, stripped away in the blink of an eye, revealing everything you actually are. A boy with a club who beats another boy to death. That's mankind in its natural state.